Welcome to the Tea Grannies. I'm Elise.
And I'm Maria. Today we're here to chat about point of view and the impact it will have on your story. But first, we have some pages to critique. So pour yourself a cup of tea and let's get started.
Submission number 1 of 2. Chapter 1. Many will die. And many more, weighed down by wells of tears in their hearts, will wail to no end. The land will be gored, jagged by the throat. Its pleas will be muffled with blood from the sons and daughters of the soil curling in its mouth. There's nothing anyone can do about it. Laba laba to fe se bi eye, afeku. The butterfly that wants to be a bird will die trying. Neither day nor night was firm, as Aragangan pressed his way through the big jungle. Everything around him hurried. Above, small birds, with energy still for it, wove in and out of the canopy as others chattered, with voices heavy and light in defiance of the day's end. Bats, on the other hand, started out in glee, releasing themselves from branches and making their first dips and chirps into the thick air. Lower down the stems, long-necked agama lizards swiveled their red and blue-striped heads back and forth, and when satisfied, shimmied their way up and down. Petals and fronds folded in, readying again for the morning sun. A malu boar, consumed with its search for resting space, snorted and rooted through the jungle floor, fresh and decomposing twigs giving in under its heavy hooves. He never took a known path when he hunted, nor was he here for such a thing as a malu. A fresh shoot, misshapen at its breaking point, caught his eye, and he squatted down. Ears still on the jungle, he inspected it, as well as a jumble of roots to its side. Upon rising, the jungle beheld him once again, Aragangan, the Alafin, supreme ruler of the Benin Empire. The air stood at attention in his presence, clinging, wanting to know more.
So my overall comments for this was pretty much, why do we only ask for one page? Why do we keep doing that? I want more. I want it now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I really loved the first line. Many will die. Perfect place. Yeah, perfect line to start with. I'm like, what? What is going on here? The world building throughout the whole piece was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And I did like that we got some of the world in before we got into the main character's head. My only suggestion is that we meet the main character earlier. We don't meet him till the end of the first page, and I think that's a little too late.
Sure.
As much as I love the world building and everything about this, so I would, where I would put it, would be right after the line about the butterfly that wants to be a bird will die trying. Mm-hmm. I think right there is a great place to introduce him, who he is, why he's important, like we get at the end, and then carry on with the page.
Yeah.
So this is another one where if I picked it up in the bookstore, Gollum clutching it and running to the checkout.
I love that image.
Yeah. It was very immersive and like, I just love the world building so much. Mm-hmm. I did have a couple of bumps that would just, I feel like things that would smooth things out. Just rearranging some sentences and stuff like that. And yeah, I don't really have any other comments aside from that.
Yeah, I'm with you on pretty much all of that. Like, I want more pages, so maybe we need to amend how many we ask for. I don't know. That can be a conversation for later, maybe next season. But yeah, this one page only is kind of killing me. For this one, I just really enjoyed the quiet kind of intensity of it, because it starts off like you said, many will die. Well, okay, now I immediately am hooked, because death, obviously, and pain.
It's a good hook.
Great hook. But yeah, I love that. I also love the depth and richness of the descriptions. I think that's kind of what you were alluding to about the world building. And then it's got this like mysterious, ominous vibe surrounding this character who we don't know much about. We don't really know anything about them until the last couple of lines. And I know that you didn't feel this as much as I did, but that last couple of lines where we learn a little bit more about the character, that is where my attention was really drawn in. Like, the world building was beautiful. The scene is really pretty. We're learning a lot about the situation around the character, but I wasn't really hooked until I got to meet the character officially. So I think I agree with you very strongly that Aragangan's character, if we could get a bit more of him before all of the lovely descriptions, but after we've kind of settled into the first couple of paragraphs there. Because I agree with you, getting settled into the scene, it's setting the stage, it's setting the scene before you introduce some person can be really helpful. And I think they did a good job of that, but then got too settled into the scene before we actually got some detail about the character. And I was at the point where it's like, okay, this is pretty, but why do I care? And I needed that relatability or empathetic connection with somebody to start really caring about the story. But other than that, I was really invested in the way things are described. Some of the wording, like you said, could be smoothed out, but the imagery is just gorgeous. And the tone and the vibe and everything is, yeah, it's beautiful. My voice feels really low right now and it's distracting me. I am sick, self-isolating at home. But if I sound a little funny, that is why. That's a detour. Loved this piece. I'm really curious about this character now that we've met him. It's a he. And then that last line, the air stood at attention in his presence, clinging, wanting to know more. Just gut punched me. That was gorgeous. It's just,
There's a couple lines that were just so beautiful, like that one especially. But I also loved the petals and fronds folded in, readying again for the morning sun. One was so nice too. Pretty. And the beginning paragraph was like, perfect.
It gives a lot of character to the jungle itself. I don't know if you've ever read books where authors like to give these like human characteristics to buildings and different things. Like I read The Haunting of Hill House. I can't remember the author's name right now, but it's an old like gothic horror novel, and the author, just the way that they describe them, the house consistently throughout the book, gives it this personality of its own, like always describing the windows as these eyes or the door as a mouth, and just giving it personifications. And this last line about the air like standing at attention at this character's presence, it's like it gives the world around him a character almost, and brings it to life in a way that other descriptions wouldn't do as good a job. So really love it.
I'm a sucker for animals and nature as well. So giving them characteristics like that, I'm like, I'm sold. I'm in.
Take my money. All right. And this is our second submission of the episode and final of the episode. You'll have to wait until next time for more. 6 weeks earlier, Althea. The explosion made Althea's teeth rattle, a furious ringing forcing itself through her brain. The windows in the charred remains of the building behind her shattered with the blast. Bullets whizzed past, narrowly missing her head as she pulled Cassandra to the floor. "Al," Cassandra said weakly, her eyes sliding down to the jagged shard of glass protruding from her waist. Cassie's face turned pale, her lashes fluttering as she threatened to faint. Trembling, Althea raised her hands over the wound, feeling her palms grow warm. Slowly, the glass pushed itself up and out of Cassie's torn jumpsuit, falling to the ground. The deep wound began to repair itself. "I told you we shouldn't be so close," Althea muttered, pausing for a moment as another flurry of shots flew overhead. She risked a glance over the rubble she and her sister hid behind. "You're needed," Cassandra said, rubbing a hand over her newly healed skin. There was no sign of the gaping wound. Through the smoke, Althea spotted Zelda first. Her sister had punched a hole through the armored breastplate of one of the armed men firing upon them. The blow sent the assailant sprawling to the floor, Zelda wrenching his helmet off to allow his head to collide with a large piece of rubble. Zelda paid no further attention to him, spinning to kick the gun out of another's hands with a stunning roundhouse. They'd received the call long after night had fallen, dragging six of the Buckley sisters from their beds to go and take on a group of guns for hire, waging war on a small European town hosting a peace summit. Their hope was to take out four prominent heads of state among the chaos and confusion. Collateral damage was something they were happy to allow.
So My favorite thing about this piece is that we get dropped right into the action, which if you listen to our first pages episode, you know I harped on that like the entire episode, so you know it's very important to me. So yeah, that was the biggest thing for me. I loved that. I could have used a little more, maybe another short paragraph or another sentence, just to get more of a feel for Althea. I don't want to say it wrong. I think it's Althea. Because we get more of her sisters than we do of her. So yeah, and then my only big bump is that last paragraph. It doesn't fit with the action that comes before. And I think that's something that could be very easily weaved through the story rather than given to us in like a single paragraph, because it took me out, especially after such an action scene to kick things off. It's a bit of a jarring transition. Mm-hmm. Zelda is badass. I would love to be able to do a roundhouse kick. Like, sorry. That's like my dream. That is super badass. So yeah, in my comments you'll see it, but she's my new girl crush. So yeah, and as for that last paragraph, I do think that my suggestion would be, you know, I'm assuming that they win the skirmish and they kind of return to base to recuperate, and that would be, I think, a good time to drop in this information without taking away from the action, or weaving it in a little at the beginning. We let us get to know Althea a little more. There's a couple options, and getting feedback from a few different readers would probably be the best way to figure out if you've nailed that or not. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this sounds like amazing. I would also run to the checkout with this one.
Yep, another take my money situation here.
Yes,
But I do like what you're saying about that final paragraph. Like, I thought it was, in terms of info dumping or too much information, I thought it was actually a pretty good balance. It's one quick paragraph and it gives you a lot in a couple short sentences. So you're not at risk of losing the reader per se, but I do agree that I think it came too early in the scene. And we want to see more of the fight and more of the action before that comes in. And if you need to get in any information, I would recommend small bits woven in through the dialogue, or like, we see Zelda, we see that she's this kick-ass, badass, feminist, adventure woman. We assume that Althea and Cassandra are, like, they're related to her in some way. They're working together towards something. So that's a good indication that they're on a team. And that's pretty much all we need to know at that point. Like, I don't need to know that there's this whole the Buckley Sisters organization or whatever it is. I just know that these three women, I think they're, three sisters. We don't know if that's literal or metaphorical at this point, but it doesn't really matter. So, I do like that suggestion a lot. Also echoing that I love being dropped right into the action, because that's, you know, that's the trend. That's where we're at. very much enjoy that aspect of this piece. Lots of action. I've heard critiques about people dropping people into fight scenes off the bat. I've heard people say, like, that can be too much all at once to get you into a story. But I think this was done really well. And we got enough character right in the midst of it that it wasn't overwhelming. I think that's why it worked.
Yeah.
So bare minimum, this piece carries forward on sheer energy and willpower alone, because it's like, okay, people are shooting things and roundhouse kicking things, and I want to know all about that. More points for using the name Zelda, because that immediately drew my attention from video game history. You know what I'm talking about if you know what I'm talking about.
Speaking of names, I didn't actually bump on it till you were reading.
Okay.
The Buckley sisters, like, Buckley is that, like, cough and cold medication, and, like, it just for a second I was like, oh, I wonder, maybe even just spelling it differently
would help.
But that was the word association that I went to, was the interesting cough medicine. And then maybe that won't be everybody, that could just be because I grew up with my mom and she's like, you're gonna take Buckley's. So I was like, no.
That's hilarious.
I've noticed this sometimes when I'm reading people's work, if they use like the name of like another super super popular character or something, sometimes it's hard to, I mean, it's just a name, but sometimes it's hard to dissociate, get your brain to stop making that connection.
Yeah. This one, I mean, Zelda, for those people that don't know, is from a video game.
Okay.
That's fine. I'm the video game nerd here. I'll take that on. Legend of Zelda. It's one of the one of my favorite games.
Ride the horse and jump jumps, because that was the only time I played it. Yeah. My brother used to be like, okay, I need to ride the horse now. And I'd be like, yay! And I would take my turn and ride the horse across country. And then I'd give it back to him.
Oh my God, the worst parts of that game were when you had to ride the horse and shoot things. And it was the hardest part. I hated it. the difference between us. Anyway, that's a whole rabbit trail to say I did associate that name with something, but it's something that I really like, so I didn't mind the association. Buckleys, like it's so subjective, right? Buckleys, I do know that association. I know what Buckleys is as a cough syrup, but I didn't click. It didn't click in my head to make that connection while I was reading.
And it probably won't. Like it's that whole thing where every beer is different. Like for me, I was like, oh my God, Buckley's tough. For you, you were like, yeah, whatever.
So this is a really good lesson in just the value of like taking feedback with a grain of salt and being really aware of what you're taking as opinion. And maybe it's a good opinion, and you want to take it into account and change something because of an opinion that someone had of your work. But sometimes it's just a subjective opinion, and you don't have to take it to heart, and you don't have to make any changes. Like one of my early drafts of book one of The Nymph Keeper, I had one person who really didn't like my main character's name, and I didn't care, so I just left it as is, and no one else ever commented on it. So, you know, it is what it is. People are funny. We're all funny that way.
That reminds me very much of the me being a man-hater, apparently. And I was like, no one who's read this has given me any feedback about that. So I was like, I'm just going to take that as opinion.
Yeah, opinion.
Although now everyone in my family calls me man-hater.
So it's a good story at the very least.
Yeah, I got a good story. And I got another nickname out of it. Thanks, family.
I mean, as someone who reads most of your work, I can attest to the fact that you have some very lovely male characters that all readers will love and enjoy. So I don't think it's accurate, but it is a fun nickname. getting back to the piece at hand, I'll wrap up my comments because I was mostly just echoing what you had said. Loving the action, love the energy, love the characters. The immediate bond between the sisters is very clear. And then that paragraph with the information at the very end there, it's a great paragraph. I just think, agreeing with Maria, it could come in a little bit later. I think I had one other comment that I wanted to make, and that was, I didn't notice it as much as I was reading today, but when I read it and was making my notes for this earlier, I'm kind of questioning whether we're starting the story in the right place, or if we are in the right place, maybe we're not getting quite deep enough into Althea's head to really sink into the moment, because I felt like I didn't have enough of a connection with her. Like I'm watching things happen to her, but it's like I'm at a distance, like I'm pretty far away and just maybe a bird's eye view, or just watching her do and say these things, rather than feeling them happen to her in real time and feeling the blast and feeling the glass like hit her as she's diving away from the window, or feeling the warmth of Cassandra's skin, or like the slickness of her blood, or you know, how graphic do you want to be? That's up to you. But because I didn't have enough sensory detail, enough emotional detail from Althea in the moment, I think this led me to feeling pretty indifferent to her by the time we reached the backstory paragraph. And that's why the backstory didn't quite hit as much, because it's like, well, I mean, I don't really care about her yet. I don't know enough about her to care, right?
Yeah.
And maybe she's just kind of a cold, or not cold, I don't think cold's the right word.
Like a very focused character. Like she's focusing on what's happening.
Focusing on what's happening, and is really good at being calm under intense pressure, which can be, it can come across as cold. Those characters can be really hard to write because they're dissociating from everything else so that they can focus on the moment, but it ends up feeling like they don't have feelings. When they do, they're just choosing when to feel them in a probably a wise way. So maybe give some thought and some revision on those issues there. But like I said, this piece kind of carries itself on energy alone. It's just intense, and
it's fun. It's fun.
It's like,
what are they going to do next?
Yeah, it's like this.
Who's going to get kicked in the teeth next?
I want more roundhouse kicks. This badass sister tribe taking out armed militia. I'm all for it. I guess that's the best place to stop. That in summary, we love the action, we love the energy, and are really curious about the magic, and because that was like, I don't think we even touched on that yet. Healing magic is sick. That's always awesome. And then the Buckley sisters, like, how are they actual sisters? How does that all work? I'd really like to know about that. And I think, yeah, just adding that depth of character to feel connected enough to relate to them and get invested early on will make this really shine and just really hit home. And that badass feminist vibe, that is spot on. Yeah. So you can't
chasing
go wrong
vibes
there.
On that first page, okay? Uh-huh. And that is a great one to chase.
Uh-huh. Gimme. All right. So, like Maria said at the beginning of this episode, we are here to talk about point of view. POV for short, which we discovered doesn't actually make it any shorter to say. It just makes it shorter to write. It's still three syllables. I hate abbreviations. But yes. Anyways, Elise is here to talk to you about POV. She's going to go over the different types of POV. Why is she talking in third person? Does that make you uncomfortable? It makes me uncomfortable, which is why I can't do it for more than two sentences. I'm done with that now. But point of view. Talking in third person gets rolled real fast. The same can be said about different points of view in writing, depending on which one you choose, why you choose it, and how you use it. It's something that I think writers tend to overlook, or maybe it's kind of the last thing they think they need to think about before they start writing something. Like, I don't think about POV before I start writing a story. You'll get like 50 pages in and then you're like, oh, I wonder if I should have thought about that before. So we're going to talk about that so that doesn't happen. It's pretty important to pick the right POV, and you might not know which one to pick until you're into the story and realize you want a deeper connection with this character or less of a connection here and you want some distance so that you can describe this thing better. So there's all sorts of things that go into that decision. And I'm just going to go over the main types of point of view so that we have an overview before we get into the actual weeds. So first up is first person. How did you guess? That's maybe a little obvious. Me, myself, and I. You see a lot of this in young adult fiction, but also in memoirs and autobiographies. That seems pretty self-explanatory. You'll see it a lot in middle grade. And in some thrillers, especially psychological thrillers, when you want to get really deep into the twisted mind that you're writing to experience that main character's inner thought life at a deeper level. I've seen a lot of first person in YA fantasy lately, and also where they have multiple main characters, which is an interesting thing that apparently Mireille hates just as much as I do. Awesome. Okay, so I will dive into the weeds on that one, even though it's a little bit of a tangent. The reason why I find first person annoying when you have more than one main character that you want to follow is because it's unnecessarily confusing. And it's not meant for that kind of storytelling. There are other POVs you can choose to tell a story in the same way and get the same effects. Why is it gotta be first person? I have to remember the chapter heading and which character I'm reading from whenever I start a new chapter. And if there's like, I recently read a book that had two female protagonists and two male protagonists, obviously love interest stuff going on there. And sometimes I'd be halfway through the chapter and someone would start kissing somebody else. And that's when I realized which character I was reading because they wouldn't be kissing the other person. It was really confusing.
I just kept getting lost. Like that, because it's too, and then I'm like, the other thing I find, maybe not with, I'm sure it can be done well. I'm just going to throw that out. I'm sure it can be done
yes,
well.
Yes.
The thing that I notice when it's first person, but multiple characters, is they all start to sound the same.
Yes.
Like there's not enough of a difference in the voice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's actually my biggest pet peeve with it. And we definitely went on a little tangent there.
We did. And we're going to talk about that more later.
Yeah.
But yeah, the bottom line is first person POV is when you're writing from me, myself, and I. I find that unnecessarily confusing when you have multiple characters that you want to get really deep into. And if I want to tell a story with that many characters, I'd go for third person, which we'll talk about later. Going in order, first, second, second person, you, them. You will not see much of this used in fiction. It's not a very common choice of POV. I think it's pretty, like, for obvious reasons, it's confusing to write, and it's, I think, can be confusing to read if it's not done well. But if you want a taste of second person in fantasy fiction, and a taste of it done extraordinarily well, actually. The fifth season by N.K. Jemisin uses second person. Every time I think about it, it blows my mind. Like, I can't get over how amazingly well that book is written. That may have more to do with the twists and the characters, but I just, it was such an interesting thing to read because you don't read it very often. So if you're looking to experience second person in fiction, The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin, that's the one book I've read where it's like, oh, no, this works. This can work if you're willing to put in the work to do it. So that's a nice study in craft. I've never done it myself. I've thought about it, and I think every writer thinks about it when they're first starting out, to be like, I want to set myself apart. I want to get into literary fiction, and I'll do it in second person because won't that be unique? And oh, wow, I'm so smart. And then they get over themselves and realize, no, that'd be a lot of work. I don't want to do that. So, but some people pull it off, and I think Jemisin did. And last but not least, third person point of view. This is my favorite. This is Maria's favorite as well, I think. He, she, they, them, it. This POV, I don't know, it's a happy place to be. I think a lot of fantasy is written in this perspective, and it allows for some distance from the character so that you have the space to more easily describe your surroundings, your world building, because you're not stuck in their head seeing everything exactly through their eyes. You have a little bit more freedom. But you can still experience that rich inner world in your characters, and we'll get into some ways to do that. So some people say you can't get as close to the character as you do with first person, and there's a case to be made for that, but I find that it allows me enough closeness most of the time. And for me personally, it doesn't get as tiresome as quickly as first person. But of course, that depends on how you use it, and there's two main characters that Maria is going to go over with third person storytelling, omniscient and limited, and we're going to talk about the differences between those.
So in third person omniscient, the writer knows everything. The narrator can be in any of the characters' heads at any time. Their thoughts and emotions are available to the narrator. They can do whatever they want with that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan of this point of view unless it's done really well, mostly because I feel like you can't get as close to the characters as you can in third person limited, which is what I write in, and that's my favorite to read as well.
Yeah.
So in that type of point of view, the writer combines first and third in a way. The writer is telling the story from a certain character's point of view, but uses like he, she, them instead of I. And I've noticed that this is the most popular point of view in fantasy, and romance tends to slip between the two characters, but uses this point of view. So you get the closeness and everything that you want in a romance as well. I particularly like it in fantasy because I feel like you can get a lot of really nice world building in there. I'm about to jump into my tangent about why I don't like first person in fantasy, so I'm going to stop talking now, but that is the difference.
So. Yes. So you have a lot of different options and choices. I think that sums up the last 5 to 10 minutes very well. And why did we have to make this complicated for everyone? Please don't hate us. We didn't do it. It's the English language. I'm going to stop with the excuses now. Honestly, I think knowing what's right for your story, if you think about it too hard beforehand, you overcomplicate it. Mm-hmm. Just start. Pick one that you're comfortable with reading, comfortable with writing, or one that you want to explore. Maybe you haven't ever done a whole lot of first person and you just want to see how it feels. Just start. You can always change it later. I know that sounds like a lot of work, which is why I don't usually change it halfway through. But if you're willing to give it a shot, you might find that benefits or hinders you, depending on what you pick. So like Maria was saying, for me personally, I've always been most comfortable in third person limited. I've dabbled in first person especially when I'm experimenting with more of a YA emotional narrative, but I still always fall back to third because I like to describe things in pretty words, and I find it harder to do that when I'm stuck in first person. Because you can get so caught up in, I did this, and I saw this, and I felt this, and I was thinking about this thing and this person, and like you get more caught up in their day-to-day life than their surroundings. I think it's easier to fall into that. I've never really liked reading omniscient third person. I like limited. I like, you know, sticking with one character or bouncing to one or two, but omniscient, I don't know. I stay away from that because I find it too detached. I feel like you're playing God. And you just don't get into people's heads enough. Like, it's just not close enough. And I don't know if I've really read very many in that style. I think it's an older style that doesn't come up as much. So I don't have any recommendations for someone that does that really well. And then I've never touched writing in second person because...
Neither have I.
obvious reasons? I don't know. It feels too impersonal, but obviously it can be done well, or Jemison wouldn't have that out there, but she did a really good job, so...
Yeah. My dislike for second person boils down to I don't like being told what to do. And if you're like, you did this, I'm like, I would never. That is garbage.
I would never. So
that's why I don't like it. Too much of a control freak to enjoy that point of view. But I think most writers have a preference, and a lot of us will end up writing in the same point of view always. Which is like me. I write in third person limited, and I would have a humongous meltdown if I had to write in any other type. I don't know if I could do it. If you're torn between two options, you're not really sure what you'll like better, you don't have a preference yet, I would consider what you like to read, first of all, mm-hmm. and then I would write your first page in the different point of views that you're considering, mm-hmm. and then see what comes easy to you, first of all, because that's going to, you want it to come more easily, and, how it reads. Like, some stories just wouldn't read well in first person, right? And so that's something to consider, too, when you're writing your story. And just touching on what Elise said, I find a lot of first person stories read like young, which is why I think it's popular in young adult. And as when I was a young adult and reading a lot of young adult, I liked that point of view. That was actually how I used to write my stories when I was like a teen. That was the default. I'm sure it can be done really well in adult fiction too, but I can't really even think of an example right now because I have blank brain sometimes when we're on the podcast.
Well, there's A Court of Thorns and Roses in all in first person, right?
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah.
I think. I could be lying. Don't take my word for it. Now I can't remember. I'm going to have to
run
check
to my
that.
Bookshelf and check.
Oh my goodness. That's going to bug me. I can't remember.
We're going to have to check. But there's upsides and downsides mm-hmm. to both. But I find like what you like to read is usually what you end up liking to write.
Yeah, that's a decent benchmark for that. Yeah, so that's some of the reasons why and why not. I think we got some of those mixed in equal portions there. But we wanted to get into the pitfalls of each one, if you will. Things that are maybe not so appealing, and they all have them. So even mm-hmm. though we have our favorites, we're going to try and do this without bias. that's impossible. But yeah, like we've both been most comfortable in third person limited. So just be aware of that when we're talking here. That said, we know it's not perfect. I'm not going to tear it down right away. I'll start with the one that I find it easiest to talk bad about. third person omniscient, which I alluded to earlier. You see it more in older style POVs, I think, and older narratives, especially like myths and legends and different things like that, because it does have that godlike quality to it, that distance. It can be more effective depending on your angle. But I think it can be really difficult to use it effectively, especially with today's audience. I think it's harder to get into the nitty-gritty of the action and make it really engaging. And then it's really hard to get close to your characters that way. Like, there's too much distance. And I mean, in the genres that we read, I should be fair, I think people want more of a deeper connection to the characters. Mm-hmm. And omniscient style POV doesn't really give you that. So that's something to think about if you're considering that POV. I think humorous books can use omniscient pretty effectively because mm-hmm. they start like taking pot shots at all of the characters and it could be really funny. So I've seen it used that way. Like, I don't think Princess Bride is written that way. I haven't actually read the book. Don't tell anyone. I know I need to, and it's been on my TBR forever. But books like that, where just the narrator plays more of a role, those might be okay for omniscient. I just find for the average narrative, it doesn't sit quite right. Third person limited, it means you have to be more careful about the information that you reveal and how and when. So it can be really good for getting into someone's head and describing different things, but you have to be really careful about not tripping into the omniscient side of things. You can't, so I'll give an example to try and make this simpler. If you're writing from the perspective of main character one, who we will call Maria for simplicity's sake, Maria got Elise a dog. She thought Elise would love this dog, and she found a really cute one at the SPCA, and she's all excited. She's really excited to give Elise this dog. But what she didn't know was that Elise is allergic to dogs. I'm going to stop things there. this is obviously a fictitious scenario, although I am allergic to dogs. So kudos to that for being somewhat realistic.
Pretty accurate, though. I mean, I would go to the SPCA and get a dog.
This sounds like us. but the problem is that if that's your scenario, if that's how you've written it, you've broken POV. Sometimes it's not as blatantly obvious as this, but in this case, it's in the line, what Maria didn't know was that Elise is allergic to dogs. In third-person limited POV, you cannot have that information there because Maria doesn't know it. That's the whole point of the point of that. That's the whole point of that point of view. It's limited to what Maria knows. And as soon as you insert a little line like that, that little did she know, or what she hadn't been told already, you're breaking POV. You're breaking the deep character experience, and you're gonna pull readers out. And it's just you're breaking the rules. I mean, I don't know how else to say that in a way that sounds.
Don't be a rule breaker for POV.
Yeah, it doesn't fit, and that's not how that point of view is supposed to work. So just keep an eye out for that. You have to be really careful about the information, knowing what information is in the character's head, that you can tell the reader no problem. But if you're going to be jumping in between characters, like you're writing from Maria's character, Maria's buying this dog, and then you want the reader to know that Elise is allergic, but Maria doesn't know that yet, well, then you need a scene break or a chapter break, and then you start writing from Elise's perspective. And then if you're going to jump back to Maria, you have to do the same thing. It's got a little more structure about it, and a little more, I don't know, you have to be a little more dedicated to the one character that you're really trying to describe. But this one, it's also easier, I find, to get lost in descriptions and to forget to add emotional detail. I'm harping on myself for this one because that's my most common critique is I don't really know how this character's feeling right now. Like, all these things are happening and it's really interesting, but like, do they love it? Do they hate it? Like, it could go either way. And that's not really a deep and immersive reading experience. So be careful about that as well, because this perspective adds a bit of distance. So you have to pay close attention to whether you're giving enough detail for the characters to really come alive for each reader.
Mm-hmm. So the downsides of first person is that you're limited to that one person's point of view, which,
it's not limiting. Much to be
done about that. Yep. It is what it is. Yeah. And so you're telling the story and you're viewing the whole world from that one character's point of view. And I find it most difficult to read in fantasy because writers kind of go for the question and answer approach to get some world building in or history of the world. And I feel like it messes with the flow and it can lead to a lot of info dumping because I always struggle with that because, like, how often do you walk up to someone and you're like, what happened in the war of 18 blah blah blah, and then they give you like a 3-paragraph in-depth description of that, you know, battle, and you're like, to me, I'm like, that's it takes away from some of the reality of like relationships with people.
That's not how conversations happen.
They're trying to like get the point across, but so that's the one thing I don't like that about first person. I think that it can be done well, and it is done well very often, but that is something that that can be a bit of a downside. And like I said before, I think it reads a little on the young side. I think it's a great point of view for middle grade and young adult especially, because I mean, when you're at that age reading that age group, that's a great point of view to read because you're like, you feel like really invested and up close and personal with the characters. Second person is my least favorite point of view because, like I said, I don't like being told what to do. I don't like how it feels. I don't like authority. the only time I've ever read anything really in second person is like some fan fictions will do that, especially when it's like on Archive of Our Own, there's often like a lot of like self inserts, and so people
choose your own adventure type thing.
Yeah, it's a little bit like put yourself in the story as if you were the love interest kind of thing. It's usually how I see it done.
Oh my!
So it's written in second person, and I'm like, even if this sounds interesting, I can't read this. I don't do second person very well. So yeah, I think it works pretty well in short stories, maybe, but not so much in novels. But yeah, like Elise has the one example that I kind of want to check out now and see if I can stand to read it.
Well, that one's nice because it's not the whole book. It's one character that's told from second person, and then the rest is, I believe, third person. I think, remembering it right. But yeah, it's not all in second person. So that's maybe...
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, no, that works. And the other... The other thing I don't like about second person is that sometimes it comes across as like you're being talked at instead of experiencing the story. And like we read to escape, we read to experience other people's lives, the rich inner lives, you know, so it's a bit hard. You feel like you're being talked at. It feels too like textbook for me. So
sure.
Those are what I consider the downsides, first and second person.
And on that note, it's lovely because we're shifting into upsides. And the first one I have is second person. I'm going to just keep rolling the ball of Jemison's book because I'm just seriously so impressed by it. Yeah, so like I said, not the whole thing, but one of the characters is written in second person. And I think the benefit of this, at least in this book for me, was... it essentially forced me to empathize deeply with that character because it was like, you did this. And this character, she's a mother of two children, and I know nothing about motherhood. That is an experience I have had. I don't know what it is to raise children or to be attached to them in the way that a mother is. But the way that Jemison wrote this character, and because it was in second person, I just... it was endlessly compelling. Like I couldn't help but relate to her and feel what she was feeling to some incredible depth that I don't think I've felt in a lot of different narratives that use third person or first person. Like it was very uniquely done. It just kind of, I guess it puts you in their shoes. That's literally what it does. Because you're reading it all as though you are the one doing it. So you are putting yourselves in the character's shoes to do the things. It shoves you into their brain. It makes you constantly think about like, okay, this is what this character is doing. How would I actually react if this was me? How would I feel in this moment? And it's a fascinating experience in empathy. So that's maybe a, you know, that's when you could consider using second person. And if you don't want to do it yourself, check out that book. Because
I think I will do, yes.
Yeah. If you can do it well, I will worship you forever and talk about you endlessly like I'm doing with this book right now. So I will move on from it now. We're talking about upsides. So for third person, I think I've already harped on this, but third person limited lets you get close to the characters, but also allows you that space to describe and world build and all those things. So I feel like it's the perfect balance of all the POVs. That's my bias coming through. But first person is about character, like you're in the moment, you're in the head. Third person omniscient is about the world and all the characters and everything around you. Second person is about character with a twist, maybe. But third person limited is giving you a little bit of everything when it's done well. I think that's maybe the best way to summarize it. And that's what makes it so versatile and so useful in so many genres.
Yeah, I totally agree. Third person limited is my shit. That's my favorite. So upsides for first person, I think the main one is that the reader can feel very connected to the main character. You get to really dive in deep to their thoughts and their feelings and their choices and their reactions. And that's very immersive. And that's definitely the best part about it to me. And you can really put yourself in their shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it makes you feel like you're experiencing the adventure. So it's also like a very natural way of storytelling. So like if you're telling your friends a story about something that happened to you, you're like, I did this, I did that. It comes naturally to write from that point of view, which is, I think it's a good one to start with. If you're just getting into writing, it's probably a natural jumping off point.
Yeah.
But yeah, like we said, third person limited is our favorite.
That's our happy place.
Sorry, not sorry.
And I think that's all we have to say because we're cutting ourselves off because we could talk forever about everything, apparently. But just to wrap up here, we wanted to say a really big thank you to the writers who submitted their first pages again this month. In case it wasn't clear what we were doing at the beginning of the episode, we've decided to make these author submissions a regular part of the Tea Grannies podcast. We had so much ridiculous amounts of fun reading them and talking about them when we did our first Pages episode back in December, where we just took, I think we had 8 different submissions and we just critiqued and talked about and read through all of them. I got to pretend to be an audio narrator, which is always really fun for me. And it's just, yeah, it provoked a lot of really cool, interesting conversations. I think people got a lot out of the episode, and so we've decided to keep it going.
Yeah, so every episode will have 2 submissions. And so if you're interested in having your first page read and critiqued on the show, you can email us your first page formatted in 12-point font to thetgrannies@gmail.com, either as an attached Word document or pasted into the body of the email. As much as I love hearing from you guys on Instagram and Twitter, do not DM us your first page. I love you, but I'm not going to like copy and paste it, move it to a Word doc, blah, blah, blah. So we'll critique your first page on one of our episodes, and you'll receive the written notes in a Google Doc after the episode airs. And that's the tea on Point of View. As always, you can follow us on Instagram @TheTeaGrannies Podcast or on Twitter @TheTeaGrannies. Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks for a chat about world building basics. Happy writing.